right. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 259, and I'm Kevin.
And I'm Herman Megowitz.
I'm Daniel.
I'm still Doug.
So, guys, what's been up? It's a Christmas season. Christmas is upon us. And I have good news. I met another listener randomly.
You met a random listener?
I did. I went to visit my niece, who is at university, and we were socially distancing. And she has some roommates. Mm-hmm. And it casually came up in conversation. She goes, Simon? I'm like, yeah? I just want you to know I listen to your show. Am I pardoned?
Oh.
So this is a shout-out for Danielle, which I promised it was coming. And Danielle is into cloning, so I'm hoping she can clone me.
No.
Because that's what she studied. Because if there's two of me, that means I get double the amount of movies to watch because we share the same mind. I'm convinced. That's what I told her. She can clone me, but we got to be able to.
And
goats,
Simon.
Yes, that's right. Goats and Simon.
Now, which version of the clone will be on the episode?
You'll never know.
Okay, switch it up a bit. Okay.
The one that makes fun of your beard, I hope.
Probably.
And that mustache, it's not really like connected to the beard, so it's kind of like confusing me.
No.
And then Doug's on the show with no beard, and Kevin's getting some scruff. You guys are all confusing me this week. Not fair.
And Mr. Mom, too.
So, I was talking to the intern, which I am known to do.
That's fine. Fine.
He tells me if somebody names a movie and I haven't seen it and I don't watch it, I have to hand him my King of Movie card. So, I said to him, I would ask you guys, is this true?
No, I think an angel gets its wings when that happens.
I mean, it's a rarity, and it's kind of a delight when you see a movie that you haven't seen. But I mean, but you're the kind of person that will put it immediately on their list. But I mean, you don't have to give up your card until you watch that film, I don't think.
So I guess my thing is, if I say I'm going to watch it in the next year, that's fine.
I think so.
Yeah. Because I do make a list of things I haven't seen.
Yeah, sometimes it takes you a while to get to a movie. I understand.
Even a guy named Doug, who's making my list very long lately.
I heard he was perturbed that sometimes members of the show skip movies and don't watch everything.
He is absolutely upset by that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hi. He said, intern.
He said, wasn't that a rule? I said, well, it was when there were three of us and we could easily exchange movies. Now that we're all across two countries and in lockdown, it's hard for me to see Kevin or Daniel and go, here's your movies to watch. You know, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So I guess that's it. So, Kevin, good news. I hear you finally saw Tenet.
I finally saw Tenet. Yes, I did. It's now available online on video on demand. So I couldn't see it in theaters. So I didn't go see it in theaters, I should say. When it was available, and now it is. So I finally caught it.
And I'll butt in. It's directed by Christopher Nolan, starring John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Kenneth Branagh, Dimple Kapadia, Michael Caine, Aaron Taylor Johnson, and exposition appearances by Martin Donovan and Clemens Posey.
See, I didn't even cut you off this time. So good I was.
Yeah, like the Oscar music. Thank you.
You're welcome. Kevin, it's your show, so I guess you get to go first.
I get to go first. All right. Beautifully shot film, very engaging visuals, great acting. I really enjoyed the lead, John David Washington. Is it true he's related to Denzel, that he's his son?
Yeah.
Is that what's, yeah, really? Mm-hmm. Amazing. Two generations of talent there. Robert Pattinson is very good in this. It was very interesting, but I did not care for the premise. I didn't think it worked. The whole thing about stuff happening in reverse and so forth. So overall, I would say it was inventive and engaging, but ultimately confusing and at times very hard to understand because of the audio mix. Now I understand that part of that was because we were hearing things in reverse and forward at the same time, which caused all sorts of auditory issues. But overall, I mean, I would give it like a 7 out of 10. It's not my favorite Christopher Nolan film, but it's good. You know, I don't think I missed anything by seeing it at home as opposed to the movie theater. So that's my review.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you on everything you said, but I love John David Walsh. Oh my God, what a delight.
Mm-hmm.
I found this film a little difficult to get into in the beginning. Like, it took me a few minutes. What the hell is going on? And then as the film progressed and the storyline, I started getting it. I'm like, okay, I get it. It's a film forward, and then we're going backwards. And then we're going forward and backwards at the same time. And then once I sort of latched onto it, I got it.
But we were going forwards and backwards through the whole movie, too.
A while to understand that.
Hmm.
And I think I started really getting it when they got it, the two main characters, and they told you, when the guy comes and saves them,
mm-hmm.
and the art dealer, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm starting to understand this. Yeah, cinematography is amazing, but it's Nolan. Mm-hmm. I expect it to be top notch.
Mm-hmm.
I expect the sound mix to make no sense to me as always, because it's Nolan. After Batman, I gave up trying to understand what he was doing with sound.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to agree with you. I just love the look of this film. Elizabeth Debicki, I'm finding more and more delightful the more I see her.
Yeah.
I enjoyed her in a film we've never discussed called The Burnt Orange Heresy.
Mick Jagger.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. I quite enjoyed her in that. I enjoyed her in this. Well, I think Arpat's come along great over the years as an actor. I think he's vastly improved from Twilight.
I just said for sure.
What do you mean, Fisher?
For sure.
For sure.
Oh, for sure. Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I think this film, you need to see it. I mean, is it Nolan's best film? No, I have to agree with you 100%, Kevin. It's not Nolan's best film. But it's a solid watch. It's worth watching.
What would you consider to be Nolan's best film?
Inception.
Inception or Dark Knight, I would go with.
No, they're one and two, or one. They're tied for me.
I'd probably give Dark Knight the edge because I like the comic stuff. But yeah.
I'm just saying.
What about you guys?
I was going to throw my vote for The Prestige.
Oh, great movie!
Great film too. Number three.
Dark Knight or Memento?
I'll see. Memento's probably tied for three.
That's Nolan, right? Or that is F. Fincher?
Yes.
Both film bro directors.
Okay, back to my point. I think if we had a little bit more explanation at the beginning of the film, I think this film would have worked perfectly for me. I think the problem is, as a viewer, you have to figure out what's going on early, or you aren't going to get it.
I still don't understand it. I don't think they ever completely explained to me how the bullets start going backwards. Maybe they tried to, maybe I just didn't hear it because of the sound mix, or maybe I wasn't paying attention enough. I still don't completely understand the story.
Yeah, for some reason, an object that goes through the reversal process still acts in reverse, even though it's an object. I didn't quite understand why that would. Yeah.
An inverting machine. Yeah. I don't get it.
I mean, like you guys have been saying, the visuals are amazing. I love the opening in the opera house.
Mm-hmm.
I love the truck heist car chase scene. I thought that was amazing. The ending I thought was kind of rote, just kind of generic battle footage, except for the big explosion at the end. I thought that one split second of the explosion with the truck driving away, that was visually appealing. But all in all, not Nolan's best.
Yeah, I got to say, I wasn't too impressed with Kenneth Branagh in this movie with his Boris and Natasha Russian accent.
He is not Hercule Poirot in this.
Nope.
No.
I think this is a must-watch with subtitles. because I noticed so much in that, like when they're going through that the art bunker and he's talking and the score is like at a 50, the dialogue's at like a 10. And it's like, okay, you just have to watch it with something else. It's creative. Like all you guys are saying, it's gorgeous. It looks great. Direction's great. But it's a basic spy story, save the world story, but it's just like, hey, do you want things to go in backwards? And we'll give dozens of exposition dumps, but it's never going to make any freaking sense. And that's how I had fun while being confused, but it would have been nice if I got it more. And then, yeah, I love Elizabeth Debicki, but she's just kind of there to be like, oh, hey, is this your character development for women, Christopher Nolan? Just try to escape the abusive relationship. I mean, I like the premise enough, but just the characters didn't really strike me at all.
I'd love to see Nolan do like a straightforward spy film, like a Bond action film. Mm-hmm. I think that would be incredible.
I think so. This is just Bond with time.
I heard a rumor that her son, Max, does in fact grow up to be the Robert Pattinson character.
That's what I was
thinking. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd buy it. But I don't know.
That's interesting.
Who knows? Right? Yeah. I don't know. I like I said, I just want to say, I think Debicki does her job. But she does give us lots of exposition at times. That's what her characters are, just to move the plot along and give us something to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when they explain all the time stuff, it's still like, okay, you're not doing a good job of explaining it.
But I don't think we're supposed to understand it. I don't think you're supposed to just accept something goes forward, something goes backwards, and it's going to look really cool.
So it's just Nolan big braining us fall, so just making us... something that doesn't make any sense.
It's
okay.
Nolan, right? I mean, films usually, I find lately, it's just what he does. High concept, some are going to work, some are like, meh, it was good.
But yeah. Sometimes he's incredible at explaining things, like in Interstellar, where they had the time moving different when you're on the planet and when you're closer to the black hole. I thought he explained that perfectly. He explained it with words. He explained it visually. In this film, I didn't feel like he wanted to explain anything. He just wanted the audience to go along for the ride.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I can agree. Okay. Wait, where's my mouse? Are we going on to Mank?
Of course.
Okay. Mank, directed by David Fincher, starring Gary Oldman, Amanda Seyfried, Lily Collins, Arliss Howard, Tubbins Middleton, Charles Dance.
I'll start a little bit with Meg's, but I know Doug probably has a lot to say. I gotta say, I love David Fincher. Every time I see a Fincher movie, I'm just like, yep, I know I'm a cinephile. This is why. This film has depth for me. I love his shot process. I love the colorization on this film. It was beautiful. Doug's gonna kill me because I know he hates all this stuff in this film. I'm guessing. It took me 20 minutes to figure out it was Amanda Seyfried because the acting was pretty solid.
Shocking, right?
Bodied.
Oh, no. I was like, who is that? That's not bad. Tuppence Middleton does nothing. Every film, she's got such small roles, I never recognize her. I always have to look her up after the fact. Gary Oldman, to me, can pretty much never do any wrong at any time. I find Gary Oldman's always solid. I don't know. I have nothing bad to say about this film, but I mean, it's a biopiece, but biopiece done well. I thought it would have a little bit more Orson Welles in it, but maybe the film's about Manx, not about Welles. Maybe that was my issue. You know, and I wish it would develop a little bit more in why he wrote Kane and things, but it seemed to develop more on just Manx in general in his life. I felt I wanted a little bit more depth of that, but overall, I friggin' love this movie. Absolutely want a Fincher movie every year, so I have something to look forward to.
I agree.
Well, I don't see how this can't be a Best Picture contender.
Well,
it's beautifully shot. It's fantastically acted. Gary Oldman shoo-in for a Best Actor nomination. As a person that loves Wells and the history of Wells, it was fascinating to find out, because Mankiewicz was a commodity, but he never was a big deal in Hollywood. So he was kind of around and he worked on scripts. The process was he more worked as part of a team of scriptwriters, never really kind of on his own. He didn't like to put his name solo behind the scripts. But he stood behind this one. And he made it personal, and he went after Hearst for some reason, and no one could ever really figure out what it was about Hearst that made him want to take him down. And the fact that he was a personal friend of Marion Davies as well, I found fascinating. What I didn't know was all the stuff about Irving Thalberg and Louis B. Mayer and their relationships with William Randolph Hearst and how they were the ones that were producing with Hearst's money the her films. So I thought that was interesting, and to see their relationship with Mankiewicz, the studio process, the fact that Louis B. Mayer was beloved, but he was cheap, and he took advantage of people as well, and I thought that was very interesting. I was fascinated, beginning to end. I was more fascinated by the past scenes than him just writing the script in the desert. And then he had a little bit of a tiff with Orson Welles, which I thought was interesting. I didn't realize that they were at odds like that over the script. And they really, Mank wrote the script himself, but Welles took half the credit and got an Oscar for it. I thought that was interesting too, that argument. I love that little bit at the end where he's like, he basically takes a shot at Welles when he won the, he said, this is the most Orson Welles ever did on that script, and a newsreel. But anyway, like solid film. Can't recommend it highly and more highly.
Just your point on Welles. I think the speech says it all when they ask him, why is Orson Welles on the script? Well, that's Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that was pretty funny saying Welles really had nothing to do with this script. I did it all, but can't keep fighting.
But you can't argue that the film would not have been made without Welles. Welles was the commodity that got it done.
I agree.
They wanted to be in the Welles business. And Hollywood hated that film because there was so much control given to the director and the screenwriter that, they never wanted to let anyone else have that kind of total control. It took a long time to get that back.
So why would they give him an Oscar then from Hollywood, is my argument.
I think it was to acknowledge the achievement and the fact that Mank wasn't hated in Hollywood. I think it was seen as a gutsy move for him to do it. I just think the Academy stood behind him there, and they dissed Welles, even though Welles got an award for it as well. Citizen Kane was the biggest deal, I think, in 1941, and it got snubbed, no doubt.
Yep.
On almost every category, and they had to give it something. So.
The honorary award?
Yeah. How Green Was My Valley? What a great movie.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it, though.
Neither have I.
That's what won over it?
That's what won, yeah.
Great film. Green is
generally forgotten.
I guess I'll be the voice of dissent here. I did not love Mank. I'll be perfectly honest.
Hmm.
It came across to me as the anti-Kane. Kane was a film made by a 26-year-old firebrand, came in with all these big ideas, taken over Hollywood. Mank is made by a 58-year-old man with a script written by his father. It seems like it wants to take Welles down a peg, but at the same time, he's referencing Kane through visuals so much in this film. There's the close-up of the sleeping drug that falls out of his hand when he's laying in bed onto the floor.
Mm-hmm.
There's the walking around Hearst's mansion, and you see the monkey cage, very much like the monkey cage at the beginning of Kane.
Sure.
I think Fincher kind of wants to have it both ways. He wants to say Kane is the greatest, but also Welles isn't. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just didn't have the, I guess, oomph of Citizen Kane for me. This one felt very plotted, very A to B to C. Citizen Kane for me, the first time I watched it, it was a surprise. Each scene took me by surprise. The whole newsreel at the beginning, the way that was edited perfectly by Robert Wise, who went on to win multiple Best Director Oscars himself. Mm-hmm. Kane, I think, just can't be touched in American cinema.
Okay. I can't argue with you there. I mean, Citizen Kane is probably the best film ever made. This is not the best film ever made.
Yeah.
It's a good movie, and it has great callbacks. It's I leave it as a more of a – it's like RKO 281, which I think is a suitable doc pick with Liev Schreiber as well. But this is, to me, sort of a, like telling us more about the man who wrote the script and why did he do this. Why did he choose to target Hearst and Davies? I thought that was more interesting than the Wells thing. It was like, Wells is a, you know, he's a whirlwind. He's a tornado. He blows into a scene and then he blows out. And he's not there. There's never like any long leisurely scenes with Wells dialogue. It's like, I got 5 minutes for you here and this is what we're going to talk about. And this is what we're going to do. Do me a great script. I'll see you later. No booze. So long. And that's it.
I just want to correct Kevin. He said 1942 Oscars. You don't want 1941. You want 42.
The film was released in 1941, so the 1942 Oscars were for films released in 1941.
Okay. Well, the movie you said won. It's not it. I have Little Foxes, Here Comes Mr. Jordan, One Foot in Heaven, Blossoms in the Dust, and Citizen Kane. There's no film you mentioned.
No, as that. I thought How Green Was My Valley was a...
It's 1941's winner. I don't know who won the 1942. Now, I'm going to have to resort to Doug. Besides Kane, have you seen any films on this list?
No.
Okay. The 1942 Best Picture is How Green Is My Valley. You clearly are not doing your research properly.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at it. Show me Citizen Kane.
I would type in 1942 Best Picture. Boom. Nominees. How Green Was My Valley. Nominees.
One day.
Well, John Ford directed it, so that's all I have to say. I'm going to watch How Green Is My Valley and get back to you. So is Doug.
Eventually, yes.
No, you're watching it next week.
The nominees for Best Picture were How Green Was My Valley, Blossoms in the Dust, Citizen Kane, Here Comes Mr. Jordan, Hold Back the Dawn, Little Foxes, The Maltese Falcon, which is a great movie.
See, what the hell? Wikipedia.
One Foot in Heaven, Sergeant York, and Alfred Hitchcock's Suspicion.
Okay, which I've seen most of. I've seen Suspicion.
Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, so Best Picture was How Green Is My Valley. I'm looking at the IMDb page.
So nobody has seen this film, so we're all going to have to watch How Green Is My Valley now.
Okay.
Daryl Zanuck, I guess he's Richard Zanuck's father.
Yes. So Daniel, you want to talk about Manx?
I watched 50 minutes of it, or 58. I loved everything that I've seen so far. Gary Oldman. It's great. Seyfried was doing a great job. Good dialogue. I liked the way it looked. I loved Fincher as a director, and I'm looking forward to watch the second half. Because I meant to watch it. I watched Citizen Kane in preparation for it the first time I saw that one.
I just want to state it here that Doug did not like this movie, so maybe he should get the most hated of the movie award than me.
Maybe. I didn't say I hated it. I just I didn't like it.
Didn't click with you?
No, it wasn't like for me. But like a 6/7, I didn't hate it.
Well,
I didn't
like a 6/10 kind of thing.
Well, I guess we owe everything to the next guy, the star of the next film, The Current War.
Ooh, yes, The Current War. Did we watch the director's cut? Right, because that's the one that's publicly released, right?
I have no idea. Told to watch a film called The Current War. I watched the film called The Current War.
Okay, I just assume it's the director's cut because the original cut was apparently bad. Anyway, it's starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Michael Shannon, Nicholas Hoult, Tom Holland, Tuppence Philip Middleton, again, Catherine Watterson, Matthew McFadden, and Tom Fisher.
So I got to say, I enjoyed this a lot. I found it a little slow at times, but I liked how it explained everything to me. Mm-hmm. So I was understanding it. It was just a little slow for me. I thought the runtime was an hour 40.
I think
10 minutes. I could have used a little trim, maybe a 1:30, but fine, I'll let it go. It's okay. I like parts of it. I understood it. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, did I learn anything? Yes. I learned lots of things. Am I going to remember it in 6 months? Probably not. So, I mean, I don't know. It was okay.
Yeah, I mean, as a procedural kind of biography, I thought it was good. It's in good acting. The style is pretty good. I thought the electric chair aspect was the most interesting. And when they did showed that scene where the guy hanged, that I thought that was brutal. Just to hear the neck snap, like after they were taking him down. But yeah, no, like with the whole shocking the horse and then trying to discredit what's the other guy's name?
Westinghouse.
Thank you. To credit him with that it's dangerous and like, oh, brought to you by Westinghouse, but just the only electricity that can kill people. I thought that aspect was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I liked it generally.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was slow at parts, but I think that was partially due to the time period and the era that they lived. Things did not move quickly. So I thought it was all about snubs and competition, because when it came down to it, Edison snubbed Westinghouse. Westinghouse really just wanted to light up the world. He was perfectly willing to work with Edison. So every time, they seemed to get somewhere, something happened, Edison would be rude or skip a meeting or make fun of him. And then he got Westinghouse's pride up, and then he stood up against him. I thought it was interesting. I thought Cumberbatch was great as Edison. Edison is such a personality, and all that BS with the electric chair that Westinghouse would kill. I mean, it was just all about, I don't think there's any evidence that AC kills more than DC. It's still electricity. The benefit, though, was that AC could power for much wider ranges and you didn't have to do, like, I think we still use the Edison design more than we do the Westinghouse one with the screw in light bulb and so forth. But you could power longer, and a further distance with a Westinghouse battery or generator. And Tesla was interesting too, because there you go, Edison has Tesla there and doesn't make use of him. Tesla, we'll talk a little bit more about Tesla in another film in this list, but I thought this was actually great as a primer, because it gave me the principles of the relationships between Edison, Westinghouse, Tesla, and all leading up to the big Chicago World's Fair, when they which was the first lit up by electricity. And so anyway, there were some nice touches. I thought it was really good. No complaints.
So back to your point. I think they do portray Edison as a superstar all the time. Everywhere mm-hmm. he goes, people want his autograph. People flock to him. Right. People are coming over to talk to him. Even almost near the end of the film, a security guard or something comes over and asks him for an autograph.
Right.
Everybody wants to hang out.
He was the inventor's inventor, and he put his face on all of his products, too. It was the Edison bulb. It was the Edison kinetoscope. It was the Edison gramophone.
I felt bad for Westinghouse. He's like, I don't want to do any of this crap. I just want to work. I do like how they explain with the electricity how the Edison box worked and mm-hmm. how the Westinghouse box worked. That helped me out a lot to understand something mm-hmm. in general. And I love the World's Fair scene. It was probably my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
When they light up the World's Fair, I thought that was beautifully done.
Yeah.
I also like that scene when when Edison was just showing, like just lighting up the buildings. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. He lit up the stock exchange, right? And
yeah, with the big ceremony. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was also able to carve out huge sections of New York City and light them up, which the other guys couldn't do. So.
Well, we don't have what we have now without those guys. I'm sure somebody would have got here eventually before our time, but
mm-hmm.
we got to thank them for that.
I think that's why the pacing was slow. They didn't even have electricity.
Nope, they did not.
Mm-hmm.
I just found Edison to be kind of a jerk in the film, though.
He is a jerk. Everything I read about Edison, that's him.
It's Mark Zuckerberg light kind of treatment, right?
Yes. And even his valet or assistant, Incel, he followed under Edison's wings and became kind of a jerk at the end too. Especially when after doing that whole presentation, and they talked about, you know, does Westinghouse's currents kill? And he said, oh yeah, well anyone can if it gets up to 200 or 2,000 amps or whatever.
Well, what I liked was that he basically said that theirs could kill too.
I think it was
the implication, right?
Yeah,
I did get a kick out of the fact that it was Doctor Strange and Spider-Man working together.
I knew that was coming.
That's true.
Although Tom Holland looked ridiculous with a mustache.
Yes,
he's 12, right?
Yeah,
and they
make
were
a joke against, that too.
They were in competition with General Zod.
I was about to say
they were.
What's he doing here?
Zod's got to work, man. Mm-hmm. He lost. Remember Superman 2? He doesn't have any powers now. He
broke his neck.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Like the hanging scene in this one, too.
Mm.
Now, did we want to go right to Tesla?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. As the compliment kind of film. Starring Ethan Hawke, Eve Houston. Josh Hamilton, yes. Kyle MacLachlan. I didn't watch this one because I didn't want to watch two films of electricity back to back.
You couldn't handle it. The shock was too much.
Shocking.
Ooh. I like that one.
I saw Tesla a little while ago, so maybe Kevin could fill in some of my holes. I didn't know this. I mean, I knew it was going to be on the list, but I saw it when it came out. This seems to take a lot of liberties with Tesla, I found. Like, it seemed to like a reimagining of some kind at times. I'm like, okay. Like, I think it hit the highlights of him and did that, but I also found when it goes into his head, I'm like, okay. I found this rather boring compared to A Current War. It was just kind of dull for me. I didn't enjoy it. I actually much preferred Nicholas Holt as Tesla than I did over Ethan Hawke. I think it was much more what I wanted. A little more straightforward biopic. This is some guy reading a book and just going off his own direction at times.
Well, I couldn't disagree with you more. I thought Ethan Hawke was riveting as Tesla in this. Tesla is such a fascinating figure because he was brilliant and he had all these fantastic ideas, but he was constantly broke and giving away his patents. And losing things. I think parts of this film reminded me of that really awful movie I made you watch early in the year called The 20th Century.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, which was about Mackenzie King. It was like a play. Right. It was like, so J.P. Morgan's daughter, who's a character in the film, is also our narrator, but she's also saying, Google Tesla, and you'll get all these hits. Google Edison, you'll get this many hits. You Google Westinghouse, you'll get this many. Westinghouse is there, but he has no real personality in this film. Just seems like a nice old guy. And Tesla is really nice to him and screws himself out of money and for a little while at least. And Edison, I don't even remember who played. Oh, it was Kyle MacLachlan, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting because it was like, you know, here he is. He's postulating ideas that we're getting to now, like Wi-Fi and things like that. He imagined all of this 100 years before, more than 100 years before. And it does remind me of a film we mentioned earlier called The Prestige, where Tesla is a character in it. And, yes. And Tesla creates the, it's fiction, but he creates that miracle machine that clones people, magically clones people using electricity, makes a duplicate. Just fascinating guy. And I thought that, Ethan Hawke looked very confused because I think the guy was out of his element with people. And I never got that impression with Nicholas Hoult. He just seemed like a funny foreign guy in current war. Smart, but you know, he had ambitions, but he'd rather play in the hotel room than actually create stuff. This struck me with the eccentricity of Tesla, and that he really just wanted to go to Colorado and experiment with electricity and do interesting things. Because, you know, I think before Tesla comes along, electricity powered lights, but it didn't power much more than that.
No,
you know, it was really his engines, his motors that got, you know, we get the vacuum, we get the, we get other things, you know, that work with sewing machines and things like that, and large scale machinery. That's all generated through his ideas and transferring current into running machines. So, anyway,
okay.
Sorry to like it. I know it could be. It did. I could see I was off putting.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I watched the trailer and they mentioned Googling Tesla. Well, what time period is this? Because he was in the 1890s.
It's set in the 1890s, but the narrator is the daughter of the financier J.P. Morgan.
Okay.
Who had a lifelong friendship with Tesla, and there was a sense of maybe romantic interest, or she was in awe of him in some ways. And, but it never becomes anything, but she's like a lifelong friend who helps him get money. But her father cuts him off.
Okay. So she's the one using Google
in the end, I think. Right. So.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
But I think she, as the first fangirl of Tesla is our narrator. She's saying, this is why he's so great. This is why you should look him up. And yeah, maybe Edison is more well known, but Tesla is. You don't find a lot of pictures of Tesla. You find lots of Edison, lots of Westinghouse. You find maybe two or the three same pictures of Tesla. He's a mystery person.
Okay.
So.
Doug, did you talk about Tesla?
I did not get a chance to see Tesla.
Fair enough. Kevin may help me. So recently, Kevin may know, I went to Niagara Falls to check out the lights. So as I'm walking along and I'm walking and looking at the lights, I run into a Nikola Tesla statue.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea it was a Nikola Tesla statue there. I'm like, oh my God, it's Nikola Tesla. I lost my crap. So
the engines that generate power at Niagara Falls are based on his designs.
That's what I was going to ask. That's what I would presume to what was going on.
On both sides.
So that's what I mean. Look how smart Tesla was 100 years ago. To understand how these things work and just, can you imagine what he could do today? Or maybe there's something he could do.
Facebook.
What I find fascinating is that these early pioneers, aside from Edison, of course, and Westinghouse, who were businessmen, the people like Tesla and some of the people that followed him, the person that set up the, like, Ontario's hydroelectric system, had the vision that this was going to be free, that power would be something we would all enjoy. And it's subsequently become something that we meter and pay for. And the way that electricity is generated, yes, there's some cost to upkeeping of engines and so forth, but there really isn't a lot of, like, to ascribe a power, like a dollar value to electricity seems very random if you look at the way that it's created and the way that it goes out.
So you're saying power should be free?
I'm saying that I'm a socialist, only for all our American friends who don't like that word, but like, I think that power should be free. I think that electricity should be generatable. I mean, we look at things like solar and wind. I think that these are things that we could be generating power without. I mean, I fully admit that our devices need to be purchased that run on the power, but and the wiring needs to be set up so that someone has to do that. You got to pay someone to do it. But once it's in place, I think that power could be self-generating and free.
I 100% agree with you, actually. What I was going to say, maybe they should, like, we get free healthcare in Canada here. mm-hmm. like our American compadres. Maybe they should just include it in our taxes.
Well, we don't get free healthcare. We get someone pays for it, but it's the government that pays for it through our taxes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Same kind of thing.
Right.
Well,
and then the theory was that the government would subsidize the cost. Right?
So we don't have a jungle line up here, though. I mean, it's pretty normal.
Hey, is there a jungle line starring Charlie Hunnam, Jack O'Connell, Jessica Barden, Jonathan Majors, Fran Kranz, and John Cullum?
A great Bruce Springsteen song.
Yes.
Yes.
Fabulous. Great Bruce Springsteen song. Daniel, you're up. Or Doug?
You can go.
I can go. All right. I did not like this film. It felt like a mishmash of gangster film and a mishmash of boxing film, but it didn't really do either very well, mm-hmm. I thought. I also thought that if I had to guess, every character in this movie smelled really bad.
Yeah.
I thought in the beginning, I wasn't 100% sure if Charlie Hunnam and Jack O'Connell were brothers or lovers, really, the way that they were introduced when they were in that house in the beginning. It took me a few minutes to realize, oh, they're brothers and it's not another kind of relationship. I don't know. I just didn't care for this movie. It just didn't do anything for me.
So you thought it was going to be Brokeback Jungle?
I felt like I've seen this movie 100 times before.
Yeah.
Warriors, the movie, the Tom Hardy movie felt similar to this. I just feel like I've seen this before and done better.
Okay.
What have you seen it done better in?
Oh, like that Warriors, the Tom Hardy film, even, believe it or not, Real Steel. I kind of like Real Steel better than this.
I thought you were going to bring up the Philly Kid or something.
Like any boxing movie ever.
Yeah. Just about. Rocky.
I will say, I like Jungle Land, but I mean, is it a great movie? No. But I like it. I like these kind of films. I watched so many bad films. Literally terribly put together films. I like the film. I thought it was very gritty, which I like. I love boxing. Absolutely love boxing films. It's pretty hard to do a bad boxing film, and I enjoyed this. Is it basic? Absolutely. Are there any surprises? Zero surprises at all. You know, and it told its story, and it kind of left, and that was really about it. I don't think there's any depth to this film. I think Charlie Hunnam is proving to us that he really has no career. Other than that, Sons of Anarchy was pretty much about it.
Country Strong?
Yeah. Was he in Country Strong?
Yeah.
And Pacific Rim.
And Four Brothers.
Yeah, so he has no career, is really what you guys are trying to tell me. I mean, I think he just plays the same character every single movie lately. I'm just like, yeah, I like this film. I like Jack O'Connell. But again, I just feel that this is good. We've seen this movie before. This is just a different version of the same movie. I mean, the angle I wanted to see kind of happens at the end, but I wanted more of that storyline, that which you never got. We got maybe a couple seconds of it with the bad guys, and I wanted more of that. And then the one question I have for the people that watch the film, how do the cops know where they are?
I guess he probably had a flyer in his wallet, right? Maybe he folded it up. I don't know.
Because the cops, I understand, show up where the dead bodies are. I get that. Yeah. And then the next scene, they're showing up to the fight. I'm like, well, how did they know it was them?
Oh, because he dropped his license.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, they show a little snap, like a little one shot of his license covered in blood, and that's how they place him.
Okay, I must have missed it. Okay. But again, how do they know he's there?
Fair.
It's an underground boxing competition. I can't see that being widely advertised. Hey, Doug, got my underground boxing. Let's put up some flyers so everybody knows where we are.
Well, I mean, the prize was $400,000, right? So it had 000. To have some kind Sorry. Of backing. Oh, yeah. It was only 100?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
but
sorry.
It's just, no, I'm sorry. It's still, I'm being a stickler. It's still a big chunk of change.
But I'm saying, they have card tournaments in Vegas all the time, and they're advertising, come to our card tournament, but it doesn't say, Daniel Prince playing in it, come and get me.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe they have insiders, and they saw that the brother's name was on the card. Dramatic, I don't know, it's just for the dramatic payoff, I guess.
Too much of a reach at the end there for me.
Yeah. I'm in the middle. Like, this is like a high five, low six for me. It's just...
Ooh, a high five, low six. So, when I'm writing that down on my letterbox,
yeah, you just...
got a 2.5, three quarters, which I don't know how to do, and...
Just gotta color it in,
I take out some magic yellow pencil.
Okay, but you have to do it right, you have to do it right on your computer, so it messes up your computer.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. But no, like, Southpaw is kind of a good comp for this, or, like, with your argument that Garrett Hedlund plays the same characters, I'm pretty sure Jack O'Connell played I like Jack O'Connell a lot, but this is a similar character to Startup, but, like, in that one, it's almost the Garrett Hedlund character that's in prison with his father. But I enjoyed this. I wanted more of just the sports movie. I thought it was going to be a sports. Okay, like, I like the idea of taking the road trip to get $100,000 and do this thing. It's kind of like another film called Donnybrook. I like Jessica Barden, though. I like it better when she's funny. So, like, this is kind of a different role, but I like
her. Hold on. Where do we know Jessica Barden from?
On that Netflix show, with an F word in it, End of the Effing World, I think it's called.
Yeah, no, don't know it.
And The Lobster, she's in The Lobster.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I knew who she was, because I looked her up. It said Bleeding Nose Girl. I'm like, okay, I know who she is from The Lobster.
Yeah.
But I saw that a long time ago.
Yeah, and like I like her monotone delivery. I like it when she's funny, but I mean, she does her role well enough here. I also love seeing Fran Kranz, Marty from Cabin in the Woods Anywhere. Even though he has like 1 minute of screen time. This is fine. I like the brother relationship. Hedlund's kind of a big dick in this film. I felt it emotionally at different times though, like when he sold the dog. I thought that was kind of brutal. And then.
That was my dog too!
Right. Like that sold it for me. And then,
I need cash for selling the dog, just so you're aware ahead of time.
Okay, so that's good. And even in the last scene, when I realized he's fighting because now it's for himself and now the brother's not pressuring him, I thought that was a nice moment.
Brought tears to your eyes.
Almost. I choked up a little bit. I cry at movies. But yeah, no, I'm like.
That's fine. You're allowed to.
In 3 months, I won't remember this. But
I forgot it already.
Just during it, it's fine. It's passable. Oh, yeah, it's fine.
And then came you.
Transitions, though. Starring Kathy Lee Gifford, Craig Ferguson, Elizabeth Hurley, who shows her boobs at like 50 minutes in for anyone. Sorry. And then Phyllida Law.
Hold on. Don't steal my line and use it against me.
I'm sorry. We can cut that out. You take the thunder. Want me to do the cast again?
No, I'm totally going to leave that in. Okay. Kevin?
Yes.
What possessed you to put this on a list?
I've always found Craig Ferguson kind of funny. So I saw a trailer for this, and I saw that it was available, and I thought, I'm curious. It has Elizabeth Hurley in it. I thought she might be in it for longer than 5 minutes. The film has a certain charm, but that's about it. There's not much to this movie. He's a cranky Scottish inn owner whose wife died, and Kathy Lee Gifford comes to stay at his hotel, and it turns out her husband who died was his cousin, and anyway... he's going to get married to Elizabeth Hurley, but it's not a good match. And anyway, Elizabeth Hurley shows up and is a bitch and leaves 2 minutes later. So it's mostly Kathy Lee Gifford and Craig Ferguson jiping at each other. And there was a certain meat cuteness to it that Bob would have appreciated. But not that I'm allowed to mention his name. I thought it was – I wasn't bored, but I wasn't engaged either. So it was just sort of there.
Oh, I know.
I'm trying to defend it.
Good luck on that one, Todd. Yeah.
I hated this movie.
Yeah.
Kathy Lee Gifford wrote this film herself.
Yeah.
She must have been bored out of her mind. There's a musical sequence in here where she and Craig Ferguson are singing a duet that makes no sense whatsoever. She's in the bath. He's in the kitchen. It just,
well,
it makes no sense.
It makes lots of sense.
He didn't like that song. It came on the radio earlier, and then they were at a bar, and she sang it on stage with a dude.
Yep.
So I know, but
I guess it was in her head and in his head. And so as they were going about their day, they were in each other's heads thinking about this song.
I thought it was the Getting Late song.
But then why does the handyman, I forget his name, also join in on the revelry? He wasn't there at the bar.
Was that the meat cute?
What I thought was weird about it was that I'd never heard that song before. It clearly was written for the movie, but it's played out as if it's the biggest song on the planet, and everybody knows it, and it's being played on the radio everywhere. And so they would all know that song. So maybe the handyman heard some one of them humming it. And so it was weird. It was not a good film. But.
So I'm showing up to Doug's house. Mm-hmm. And Doug and his wife are having this moment. She's singing in the kitchen and Doug's on the couch singing away. And I just have to show up and join in going, you've got a friend, it's me.
And you show your butt crack along the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Doug.
I just want to know how you can sell. She must have had enormous property in Connecticut.
Hmm.
Because if she sold her property and her hardware store and has millions of dollars, mm-hmm. you're not selling a little hardware store for millions of dollars unless your last name is Home Depot or Lowe's.
Right.
I mean,
maybe they own the building that the store was in, and it was in a prime location and
a rental property.
Or they had acres of land in Connecticut, and when she sold that, but the way she said, oh, I sold my home and the hardware store. I'm like, you're not making millions off of that.
No, she didn't sell the hardware store because she didn't sell it.
I thought she said she did at the end.
No, she got the phone, or maybe in the end, but she got that phone call and said, I'm not ready yet. And why was the joke her husband was like a box of chocolates? That was a terrible joke.
So they liked Forrest Gump, and so he said,
no, I
put
know
my
that.
Ashes in a box of chocolates and take it to Scotland and France and Italy.
There was no payoff.
Spread my ashes around. The whole thing was, yes, there was. They spill the ashes at one point, and Craig Ferguson makes some funny jokes about how weird it is she carries her husband around in a box of chocolates.
And keeps going back to the stupid joke.
Afterlife is like a box of chocolates.
And then they introduce that his mom wasn't really his mom, but that's why she went there to be his mom. Who cares?
No, his aunt
is her husband's
the mother.
Mom.
Yes,
I know that.
Okay,
I don't fucking care.
Listen, this was completely a film that you could show to your mother or your grandmother.
Yeah, I know.
And they would like
film.
It.
Didn't I call it Doug? Can I tell you, Doug, Kevin O'Donnell, a grandma film?
It's a grandma film, for sure. Because who else watched Kathy Lee Giffen every day on the... That's why she's famous. She appeals to moms and grandmas.
This didn't have Regis.
This film needed Regis.
Yeah, no. So Craig Ferguson... I've seen a lot of Craig Ferguson recently because he shows up on YouTube flirting with actresses from his old show. And so that's his whole gig. He flirts with actresses and he plays cute. And throws funny, but he says, ooh, I love your legs. Ew. You know, that kind of stuff. He's mildly entertaining in a drunken pervert kind of way.
This film is not mildly entertaining. It's boring.
I would not recommend going out to see this unless you're a grandma or a mother.
Well, there is an actual line in the movie where Kathy Lee Gifford says, "I wonder what it would be like to be her mother," talking about the waitress. So that's who this movie is aimed at. It's aimed at women over 50, I would say.
It's available for women to watch the Women's Network and Lifetime.
Wait, is it a TV movie or is it a regular one?
I have no idea.
But every reason you guys have said is exactly why I didn't watch it.
You're too busy combing your beard. We know what you're doing. Yeah. Now, while you were combing your beard, did you think of a place you could visit? Like, do you go into like a trance of some kind to go, "I want to be an antebellum. I want to be an antebellum."
Oh, no. Yeah. Starring Janelle Monáe. Antebellum. Starring Janelle Monáe, Eric Lang, Jenna Malone, Jack Houston, Kiersey Clemons, Gabouri Sabeed.
Hey, listen, that was a hard transition to make.
Simon, I was just curious. Can you go first with this? Because I know that you don't look up much about films before you watch it, and I feel like this would be so gosh darn confusing without knowing anything about it.
Okay, yeah, I will tell you. I watched the first half an hour of this film lost because we start in the Old South and we're doing this. I'm like, okay. And then it flashes back to today. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't understand this. What is going? What did I miss? And yeah, I got to say, I did not understand this film until about halfway through. And then it finally snapped. And I'm like, oh, it was the point where they found the cell phone. When the guy pulls out the cell phone, that's where I understood this film. Before that, I was friggin' lost.
I'm everybody
like,
was.
I
knew the plot before this. Like, I knew that it was like something to do with maybe a bit of time, present and past, and future a little bit. But even then, I was lost. I was like, okay, like then why are we starting? Yeah.
I thought it was like that Christopher Reeve film, Time After Time, where he only holds the coins and he goes to sleep and he wakes up and passed. I really thought that's what was going on. I liked Antebellum in the end, but I was so lost in the beginning of this film. And I enjoyed it immensely once I figured it out. But that first hour I had a lot of problems with just because I had no idea what was going on.
Fair. I just watched this before the show, and I think it could have been edited better to give you more of a what the F is going on here.
So my issue is the editing?
Well, because it's for quite a long period of time. It's like 12 Years a Slave. It's about a bunch of slaves being abused by racist white guys in a plantation. And that's it. It's like, well, what does this have to do with the modern stuff that we saw in the trailer?
Yeah.
And now I would have done it like so that maybe she goes to bed and then she wakes up and she remembers her past life. And then I would have done that maybe one or two times to say, what is going on here? Why is she a slave? And why is she like reliving her past life of an ancestor or something like that? I think that could have been, that drama could have been built up much more. And it would have been better with the girl that commits suicide who is pregnant to get the sense that she was a modern person. They hide that. She's seeing resistance and she's, but the sense that there's no sense that she's a modern person in this weird setting.
Yeah.
Which is the problem I found with the whole film leading up to this is that they're behaving as if it's 1870 or 1865, but it is now. I mean, that's the catch is that it's now. It's like, the Civil War reenactment park went 10 times too far and decided that part of it needed to be like the Old South and abuse slaves and rape women and, all that stuff. So.
Said Shyamalan, oh, my beer. The Village kind of twist.
Wasn't The Village? Son, you lost The Village.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with the editing though, because it's like, if you watch the trailer, you kind of expect that it's so disorienting that it spends 40-45 minutes within the Old South, and then it's like, oh, what if she was modern? And then it's because the twist isn't much. So it's just like, oh, and now we're back. She just got kidnapped, and they're just, it's just a crazy ass cult. And it's, there's a bit of mystery in the first 45 minutes because it's like, oh, we have to escape. And it's like, okay, why are you guys trying to escape? And it's just not well written in that way. And even,
it played like a slave movie where they want to escape. And that could be an interesting movie, and it has been interesting movies in the past. Like, it had a very 12 Years a Slave feel to it. Like, they're obviously capturing African Americans and putting them into slavery, and why is that happening? So, but the fact that they're, people from Louisiana or wherever just being captured and thrown into this thing, like, you'd think they'd be like, what the fuck? You know, like, what's going on here? I want to call the FBI. Then you'd be like, whoa, wait a second. What's going on here?
And I wanted to find out because they're all taken because they're advocating for black people and for the equality of it. I wanted to know why Kiersey Clemons' character, the one that hangs herself, why she was taken. Like, what was her role? Kind of thing. But you don't get that because she hates.
I don't think you're ever going to get that.
The one guy that helps her, she says, sorry, professor.
Yeah.
And you're like, he's a professor. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, she hangs herself before you're like, oh, okay. So this is why they got taken. Because it's modern.
I remember when this was coming out, the advertisements made it look like it would be a supernatural thriller. That there was some kind of connection between Janelle Monáe's character. Like Kevin was saying, like a modern woman remembering her ancestor's past or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's not what this movie was.
And in the trailer, it kind of looks like she teleports into the middle of the field, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, can we just mention Jenna Maloney's southern drawl was the worst thing ever?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate sugar. Like, I could do better right now.
Oh, I swear.
I'm going to steal you.
And the bit with the kid in the elevator, like, you're not supposed to talk. That's just fucking with the audience. I'm sorry. Like, the character would have no point of reference. Like, why is this girl talking to me like this? But to us, we're like, oh, it's a little girl from the plantation. Have they come back through time to reclaim her? And
yeah.
Like, anyway, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
It was well shot.
Very well shot.
If they didn't want to hold, I think this could have been a good film if they didn't just hold the twist so bad. Like, if they just told us the twist from the very beginning, I think I would have liked it more.
I like the twist. Hold on. Mm-hmm. No, I like the twist a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just kind of a, hey, screw you for 30 minutes and then that's when you actually find the plot of the film.
But so I think they could have played with it more. I think they could have played with it as it, because they started out as like what you remember your ancestors and the things that happened in the past as they passed. I mean, you think, is she remembering another life, or is there a time travel aspect to this? Like, is there maybe some MacGuffin that transports modern people into the 1800s, and then they're captured, and then they're like, why am I here? Why am I a slave? And I'm not, like, that would have been more interesting to me, or that at least trying to figure out why it's happening would have been more interesting than the, oh, yeah, by the way, it's now.
Yeah, or like a body swap kind of thing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Something that ties the past and the present to make you think that it was the past. Instead, it's like, okay, as soon as she hears the cell phone and the horse, then she's like, oh, hell, it's now. These guys are assholes. They've kidnapped me, and they're made their pretend. It's all make-believe. It's all pretend.
Though, if this was a better movie, it would be interesting to watch it again just for, like, all the little hints in the first 45 minutes, mm-hmm. right?
I don't think there are any.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, you find out why she's doing the little tippy toes so she doesn't wake up the senator guy. He was actually, like, a state senator, apparently.
Yeah.
But they don't really actually tell us that in the actual film.
Okay. Are we moving on? Is anybody named Ava in this film? Ava? Beijing Ava? Party 1?
Bueller. Ava, directed by Tate Taylor, starring Jessica Chastain, Common, John Malkovich, Colin Farrell, Diana Silvers, Gina Davis, Jess Weitzler, and Joan Chen.
I just want to say Jessica Chastain's best friend is Jess Weitzler. Really? Yes, 100%.
Somebody go ahead.
All right, I'll start. Okay. This movie left me with more questions than answers, if I'm perfectly honest. I did not care for this film. I'll just read out my questions that I actually wrote down.
Okay. Oh, there's questions.
Why does the movie show Camille in the beginning following Ava on her hit, but then all of a sudden at the end when Ava kills her father, Camille is not around? Why did they make such a big deal out of Ava's alcoholism if all of a sudden at the end she's going to succumb, have some drinks, and then proceed to kick ass like it's no problem whatsoever? And my last question was, were they actually hinting that Gina Davis was also an assassin before she gave birth? Or was that just something I was reading into it?
I think you were reading into the Gina Davis thing, because I didn't really get that impression. And then the Diana Silvers, where she's following her, is because Colin Farrell was like, hey, could you just go to her, and we're kind of suspicious of her. Can you just go and see if she's talking with the clients again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then when he goes himself after her, why wouldn't somebody follow him as backup?
He's a big cocky man. He won't get killed by a woman.
It was dumb.
And then Diana Silvers is just
although doesn't her his, doesn't his daughter shows up at the end. They're good questions. The alcoholism thing bothered me, that it was like they made a big deal of her overcoming the addiction and then she's drinking again and she's mm-hmm. kicking ass. It's like, but okay.
I think that was because she was drinking because of Malkovich's death, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you mean she can't kick ass that well under. She had like three little things, right? I don't know.
Yeah, but they made such a big deal out of it. Oh no, I can't drink with you in the first hit, and then she's out for dinner with her sister and her sister's fiance, who was her ex lover, by the way. But just the whole oh no, she can't drink at this meal. It was bullshit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to defend it in any way because I didn't like this film either. The cast was good, but they just got misused. This is like a family drama under the guise of a spy film. And I didn't care about the dynamics. I didn't care about Common. I think the only thing I ever felt about this movie was Gina Davis saying, oh, I picked the dad over you. I thought that was okay. But that was like out of seven trying to actually build this character who's not interesting in the slightest. That was the only moment I cared about. And even bitterly, I cared about it. I just... 2020 is bad for women assassins, like Rhythm Section and then this. It's just, can we just close it already? Try again next year.
I think this thing was a big pile of crap. Yeah. I hated all of it. It made no sense. It bored the crap out of me. I had no interest by the end of it. I was happy it was over. Mm. It's probably on my worst movies of the year list.
I was gonna say that sounds kind coming from you because I felt like you would hate this, but you just don't have the energy to hate it.
It was so dumb. It made no sense to me half the time what was going on. I thought the action scenes were poorly shot. I thought Jessica Jones was laughable as an assassin. I thought this was a fever dream at most times while I'm watching it, and it didn't even wrap up the movie.
No.
And so I hate films that end on a stupid cliffhanger, and I don't want to see the next one. Please stop. This film should never have been made. Waste of money. Waste of any talent Jessica Chastain, and she's about to George Sean Clooney on Life on the D-List.
The Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus pretty much sums it up for me, too. Ava seems to have all the components of an entertaining spy thriller, but not even this spectacular cast is enough to salvage the dull, cliched story that they're given to work with.
For sure.
Guy Lodge of Variety. This film provides an adequate showcase for producer star's unexpected prowess as an action hero. Yet the skimpy dial-a-cliché script makes the whole enterprise feel more like a mid-range series pilot than a major star vehicle.
So true.
I thought it was watchable because it had some great actors in it who I enjoyed their performances. I didn't mind, what's his name, the Irish guy?
Colin Farrell.
I thought he was all right. He was over the top. He had strange reasons for ending the relationship. And then that he kills John Malkovich for no particular reason bothers me. The whole stuff with Gina Davis. If she's an assassin, an elite assassin, there's no way she would have any connection with her family whatsoever. She'd be constantly living in hotels, not reaching out to them. She might come back incognito to see her mother before she dies, but there's no way she's going to spend half the thing saying, run away. The whole bullshit with the former boyfriend that was going to marry her sister, that she wants to try to run away with her and marry her, all that stuff. Are you okay, Simon? Simon's frozen. He's shocked.
Is he doing a really good mannequin thing?
No, I think he's frozen.
He's gone.
That was quite the face, though. That was quite the face, though.
I was scared a little bit there.
Yeah.
I was scared a little.
I thought maybe he had a heart attack or something.
Ava gave him a heart attack, let's be real.
He's recording the episode, so he's got to pop back in again.
Oh, I'm recording it, don't worry.
Oh, okay.
But how do I give him another invite? But yeah, no, I agree with everything you're saying. Like, Mr. Fantastic shows up just to get killed.
Yeah.
That's fine, though.
I didn't mind that scene.
That's normal for these kind of movies. You have a semi-big name in the beginning to kill off.
It's kind of the whole aspect of, and I think the scenario with like, it's like, oh, what if James Bond could talk to her, to his family, or like, and the whole aspect of like, oh, why did you do what you do? And just becoming a psychotherapist wasn't very interesting. Should I just stop the recording until he's back?
Yeah, might as well pause it.
Okay.
That's cool.
Okay. Recording again. Now we're moving on. Now that movie's gone in a flash. We're moving on to Life After Flash. Documentary about Sam J. Jones. I didn't have much of a cast list for this one.
No, it's just basic. Yeah.
Sorry?
Who's in it?
Sam J. Jones.
Aside from him.
I didn't do a cast list.
I think a few members of the cast.
Brian Bloody Blessed.
Brian Blessed's in it. And I didn't realize the guy who played Dr. Doom, whatever his name is, the Clytus, that he was still alive.
No, I didn't know either.
Do you want me to look up the cast list? Or
no, it's fine. We can talk about it.
There's no cast list. It's a documentary, right?
So yeah, that's exactly why I didn't look any up.
I'll start because I picked it. It was someone recommended it. I love Flash Gordon.
Who was this person?
Sam Jones?
That recommended this?
Oh, Fuji.
Fuji! Fuji, I know you're listening. I have never forgotten you.
Okay. Well, you and he share a birthday weekend.
We do.
So, basically, Sam Jones did Flash Gordon and never really had much of a career after that. And he's always been saddled with this reputation that he was difficult because some things happened during the production of Flash Gordon where these De Laurentiis and his people kind of painted him as being a difficult actor to work with. He had high opinions of himself. And he said, I think a lot of it had to do with his representation, getting involved in some negotiations. And in the end, he wasn't brought in, and someone redubbed a lot of his dialogue towards the end. So there was always this thing, too, because Flash Gordon was such a big deal, and so many people loved the movie. Why wasn't it ever revisited? Why was there never a Flash 2? Why wasn't there ever anything bigger than this? So I guess they couldn't find Timothy Dalton or he wanted nothing to do with it. But I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting to catch up with the cast of the film. But it's not a great. And Sam Jones, I mean, he's emailed me, which is kind of weird. I've gotten emails from Sam Jones basically asking me to bring him to shows. But I'm like, I don't make that decision. So I send it up the ladder to the people who do. But like somehow he's tracked me down. He's like, you do shows. Invite me to your shows. I'm Flash Gordon. Okay, well. So I did. I like that personal connection to see what the guy was like. Because he's in person. He loves his fans and he's full of enthusiasm and he loves the fact that he was Flash Gordon and the whole Ted thing was a big thing for him, revived his career. So.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. Sam Jones was a dick to start off. And he admits that himself. A complete dick during Flash Gordon. Partially, and he deserved everything he got during Flash Gordon. I have no sympathy for Sam Jones. Zero. Because for everything he says, and he says that he did it. I mean, now he loves his fans because he's found God. And he's become a humble person. I get it. And this is his only way to make money, is to get fans to come and ask for his autograph. Mm-hmm. I mean, do people really want to talk to Lou Ferrigno? No, because he's not friendly. He gets all angry at everybody.
But they do get excited when he's there. People do want to meet Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, I want to meet Brian Blessed. That guy looks like he's having fun.
Oh, I love Brian Blessed. And that's part of the why part of the reason why the film is so enjoyable is because Brian Blessed is a hoot whenever he's on screen.
He is.
He had
awesome.
The best stories.
Oh, he looks like he's having fun. And that, I mean, the rest of the cast looks half asleep except for Melody Anderson. Looks kind of awake. It looks pretty good for her age, I thought. I thought she was pretty good. I mean, I just never found this interesting. I just thought it was a fan film that they just made almost.
Going, yeah, it's almost like a Kickstarter film, like a bunch of people put it together.
I can't say I enjoyed the film. I found it kind of dull at times. I really didn't enjoy it. I mean, it was nice seeing some old fan, but other than Brian Blessed, I really had no interest for any of these characters.
I was fascinated to see Peter Wingard. That just, he was Clitus. It was so cool to see him, that he's still alive and that he had some great stories, I thought, as well.
Yeah, maybe I just don't have the nostalgia for Flash Gordon. I enjoyed Flash Gordon. I did like the Brian May stories. Mm-hmm. I thought they were really good.
But that was really cool.
Overall,
yeah.
I think you have to be like a diehard Flash Gordon fan to enjoy this.
And I am, so that's why I enjoyed it.
That's what I mean. I'm not. I like Flash Gordon. I like the film, but I don't love it. And I think I felt the same about the documentary. I just wasn't invested enough in this. Now, if somebody did this with the Kevin Smith people, I'd probably be all over it, slobbering over the mic going, yeah, I love this thing. But I get it. You got to be a fan of the material. Enjoy it.
Yeah, it was nice to see Topol, too. Sorry.
I was going to say, it kind of took me out of it a little bit when they went to celebrities for talking heads where they obviously were not talking about Flash Gordon. Like Richard Donner and Michael Rooker were obviously talking about getting typecast as superheroes, and they asked Stan Lee what makes a person a superhero. It kind of took me out of it when I saw those big name people talking about stuff but not specifically about Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Jay Moos, man. Flash Gordon, And what was up with those two reject fans? They drove me nuts. Oh, we go to lost conventions. Oh, not with each other. Like, what the hell? Are those guys trying to be funny?
Well, one of them's a stand-up comic. Richard Fuchs, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's not funny. At least what I saw was not funny. Oh, no. I did like the collectors. I mean, Alex Ross seemed to care. I know he is. And I like
Alex Ross loves that movie.
And I love the collectors showing me their stuff. I'd rather spend an hour and a half with them and Brian Blessed with them. Would have been a better film than what I saw. Hmm. Can you see Brian Blessed and Alex Ross hanging out? Would have been hysterical.
Oh, yeah. So could you tell me how you felt when you were the Hawkman and you're doing all this? I said, give them all ale! And then I took an axe and I swung it at his head. Okay.
Yeah,
and then
Timothy
Alex Ross
Dalton
would be like,
ran away.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton ran away from this film as fast as he could go.
Yeah. you know, he's James Bond, so.
Yeah.
I haven't seen.
We've discussed that.
I haven't seen Flash Gordon, so I didn't watch this.
I did enjoy the Brian May stuff when they talked about the soundtrack, because that's such a great soundtrack.
That was awesome. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us.
Did you have a question you wanted to ask us?
No. I did ask it.
Oh, you did ask it. Okay. Did anybody buy it? Oh, okay. Do you have another question?
No, I don't have any more questions.
All right. Sorry, I have a question. Did anybody buy anything?
Daniel, you're moving. No. You're not allowed to buy anything.
No, I didn't buy anything. I'll probably get Christmas gifts, so I'll probably have stuff for next time, but not today.
That's not okay, Daniel. I need stuff right now.
Right? Okay. Did you buy anything, Simon?
No.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Good.
Absolutely, my shelf not stuff to watch. Oh, hold on. I did get a lovely gift from a friend. Was involving three DVDs with Ron Carwai in The Mood for Love, some Jane Fonda movie, and something else. And that lovely person was Doug. So yay. Thank you, Doug, for sending them to me. But I haven't watched any of them yet. I can't remember the third film.
Bad Day at Black Rock.
That's it.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
I picked up some $5 specials.
Were you hanging out with Bob at Walmart?
No, iTunes. So Popeye has been remastered with extra features. So I watched that. I love Popeye. Terrible final act, but great start. The Little Hours, which is a film I'd never seen. I know we reviewed it in the past, and I didn't care for it. Flash Gordon. So I upgraded my standard definition to an HD. Support Your Local Gunfighter with Brockford Files. What's that? James Garner. And that was it. Those were my purchases.
Big week for you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Douglas?
Nope, nothing this week. I'm waiting for Christmas.
So, I have a question, Doug.
Yes.
On average, I'm guessing you're getting 8 to 10 Blu-rays for Christmas.
About that, yeah.
Do you open them immediately, or do you wait? And do you like to savor that opening?
I only open a Blu-ray when I'm about to watch it.
So you've got the Blu-ray. You've been waiting to see it. There's people home, maybe not home, watching it with kids or not. Do you let them open it, or is it always you?
If they want to, they can. That's fine.
Oh, see, that's where I disagree. I have to open it. I have to hear that sound of the paper, the little plastic being ripped, and I have to take it off. I have to have the sound. That's got to be me, or I can't do it. Because I buy so much stuff used, or at garage sales, I very rarely get to open that cellophane.
Okay.
So the day I got your Juan Car Y, I'm sitting there peeling off that cellophane. Not that I really need to open it then. Because it was in front of me sealed. I had to open it. So I guess we're out of here. And if they make it...
Simon unwraps it.
Bye.